It is Thursday, May 9th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, graduating from college is tough. Getting a job after graduation might be tougher.
They're not always looking for someone right out of college. They're looking for someone who is experienced in the field to contribute to that growth. So it's tough to be a small fish in a big pond, a pond that is rapidly, rapidly growing.
Plus, food entrepreneurs launching small businesses in Northwest Arkansas for everything from microgreens to jams.
We seek to spread joy and jam, and we do that with Lanyap, which is a little something extra. And so we like to say we do that from the inside out.
And we have music inspired by motherly love. An appropriate sound perimeter from Leo Rebe for the weekend. First, the news from NPR.
KUAF is partnering with The Momentary to give away two-day passes to Freshgrass Bentonville May 17th and 18th. This all-ages festival features live music performances, workshops, local vendors, and more. Winners announced May 15th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Giveaway entry at KUAF.com. More information and tickets at themomentary.org/freshgrass.
This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas's School of Journalism and Strategic Media. Later on our show, we have some old school, growing microgreens and making jam, and some new school, advancements in telecommunications. We'll cover the microgreens and jam when we talk with two of this year's participants in the Curate Courses program designed to help local food entrepreneurs. And Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics will cover the new school when he explores how an Arkansas-based company is working to spread connectivity to some of the smallest towns in the state. First up, graduation is coming up quickly across area college campuses, and a number of incoming graduates are finding it difficult to find a job. Ozarks at Large's Alexis Anderson speaks with two seniors to get a better idea about the reasons why.
Graduating from college is a major milestone in a person's life, but the worry of finding a job after graduation can overshadow this event pretty quickly. Deciding where to live and how you're going to be able to afford to live, this has been a constant worry for Drew Chamberlain and Katie Manning. Seniors graduating this year started college during COVID-19 at its peak. Some say this has its advantages, but graduating senior Katie Manning says it has more than one disadvantage.
I honestly think that just kind of set up my whole college career in a way, because the first year and a half was all online. I didn't have any classes in person, couldn't really go anywhere, couldn't get involved in anything. And right off the bat, I feel like resources were stripped from my hands. And just because nothing was open, everything that you had to do was online. Meeting people was really hard. Getting connected as a freshman is like really important for setting up how your college career is going to look like the next 4 years. So that right off the bat, I feel like just kind of gave me an expectation of like not really needing to do things and just kind of going with the flow and getting my classes done. I wasn't involved in a sorority. I was just kind of your average college student. And then when my junior year hit, I started realizing that people were doing internships and getting more involved. Clubs are starting to open up, but they weren't open up to the extent. I'm an exercise science major, so the clubs that are available at University of Arkansas are interesting anyways. They're great clubs, but they really didn't start opening up until my senior year completely, or at least I didn't know about it. And then my senior year hit and I realized like, oh, I should have been getting involved and being in clubs and putting myself out there.
After struggling to find an internship in the field he was interested in, Drew Chamberlain says he should have seen the signs of how much of a trial job searching was going to be.
You know, starting in the fall, just, you know, October, just one, you know, once a day applying for a job or applying for a couple. And if not applying for one, then doing something to better myself or my chances, whether that be emailing people that I know that work for industries that I'm interested in the area, or seeing if someone knows a friend of a friend that I could talk to. And it kind of became overwhelming at times just to reach out to companies almost like mindlessly, and then just being able to anticipate that you're not going to hear anything can be really disheartening, to put a lot of work into a cover letter from a company that you're never going to hear from again.
Technology has often made this search a little harder, giving this generation a disadvantage.
It's not what it used to be, where you could knock on doors and get a job on the spot, especially when a lot of jobs these days are just, you know, if your resume doesn't have the right keywords when you submit it online, it's like you're not even going to get flagged to be read by a real person. So
Drew's true desire is to make films and tell stories. Freelance is the optimal route, but the stress of this lies in where or when your next gig could be. But a more reliable job could be found working for a firm.
My heart says, you know, freelance is great, but, you know, my bank account says no. So I always wanted something full time. So searching for jobs, you know, in advertising, marketing, places around here where video is growing, especially in Northwest Arkansas, where it's like, you know, entertainment and certain industries are growing here and we're putting lots of money into it. But trying to catch the train that is that growth can be tough, because they're not always looking for someone right out of college. They're looking for someone who is experienced in the field to contribute to that growth. So it's tough to be a small fish in a big pond, a pond that is rapidly, rapidly growing. You know, but as of recent, nearing graduation, it's almost like a ticking time bomb of being like, oh, you have one less day to figure out, you know, how you're going to make your income. And so it became crunch time. I opened up a Google Doc on my computer and I wrote down the name of every advertising, marketing, production company in the area, and just sent emails to everyone, just switching out the name of the company with, you know, this email template, just hoping to get a response, to get anything.
Katie is not in a sorority or any clubs. As she entered her junior year last year, she realized she needed an internship but didn't have the resources to secure one. Like Drew, she is learning that it's a little difficult to find an internship in the field she wants to work in.
I'm not planning on being in a clinic after I graduate, and most of the internships available are in clinics, which is great, great experience if I were to do that. But since I'm not going for that, I feel like my options are more limited. And then now I'm here about to do my internship over the summer. I'm walking the stage in May, doing my internship in the summer, and finding a job I feel like is going to be really difficult.
After her internship this summer, Katie is hopeful they will offer her a job, but she doesn't quite know what this internship will be yet.
The exercise science advising office told us about our internship options about 2 weeks ago and said that she's going to send a list to us next week. So the week of finals is when we'll get to pick our internships, and then they'll just put us on one. So they sent us a list of options, and then first come, first serve, you get to pick your own, and then hopefully the one that is your first option you'll be put in. But there's no guarantee. I think summer might look a little differently just because there's not as many students, but so I don't know what I'll be doing for an internship yet. So I'm just kind of hoping that it will go really well and that I'll really like it, and I'll hopefully get offered a job afterwards.
Katie's dream is to be a woman's personal trainer and health coach for different stages of their life. Regardless of her degree, she will have to do additional studying and acquire these certifications. Katie says she feels a little behind because she didn't have the resources or conversations with her advisors about next steps.
Whenever you do academic advising, they needed, I think, to understand the freshmen that were coming in COVID, the year of COVID, and really push when things started to open up and be like, here are your options. This is what you should be getting into. This is what's more common to get into at this age for your degree. Because I think that would really help me out in understanding, like, okay, this is where we're at now, so what can I do to take a step forward? But I honestly think, like, exercise science department, I don't think was very big until maybe a couple years ago. And so they're trying to figure it out, or maybe there's new things coming along that they're not ready to put out yet. I'm not really sure.
However, having the right questions to ask your advisors could help them lead you down the right course.
When you do meet with your academic advisors, I would give advice to ask questions, no matter how annoying it may seem, because I know I probably held back questions my sophomore and junior year because they just seemed like they were done with the appointment. and they didn't expect any questions to be asked. But I didn't really know what to ask. I would ask questions though, if you had any stupid questions about like, where can I look at online classes, or where can I find this, or where can I do that? Because I didn't know how to do any of that until my senior year. And they were like, you could have been doing online classes this whole time. But I had no idea. I didn't know where to find that.
Sometimes a job offer might appear, but might not be what we initially want, and have to decide what would be the best in the long run.
I got offered a job, not for one that I applied for, not for one that I was looking for. It solely came off of a relationship that I had preemptively made, someone that I had worked with before here and there, and they knew that I was capable of the job. Now, granted, that's a huge weight off my shoulders. Is it gonna pay exactly what I want right out of college? Absolutely not. I mean, it's gonna be tough for a little while, but it is something that I can learn and grow into. And now I'm at this stage where I can either say yes to this job, or with this short amount of time that I do have, do I hold out and try to find a different job?
As graduation nears, the tension of one less day to find that job emerges, and trying to figure out how to make an income makes it that much more strenuous. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Alexis Anderson.
A statue of civil rights icon and Little Rock Nine mentor Daisy Bates now stands in the United States Capitol's Statuary Hall. It takes the place of a likeness of prominent 1800s lawyer Uriah Rose, representing the state of Arkansas at the nation's capital. A ceremony at Second Baptist Church in Little Rock detailed Mrs. Bates' legacy before the unveiling was live-streamed from Washington, D.C. Among the tributes, Crystal Baker, regional director of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, brought the crowd to their feet, calling on everyone to continue Mrs. Bates' legacy.
What nine children will you take and mentor and make sure they get the right and just education? What nine children will you take and make a difference in their lives? That's what we need to do today.
Once the statue was revealed via live stream from Statuary Hall, applause went up from the crowd. Mary Harden, Daisy Bates Foundation board member and tour guide at the Daisy Bates home, says she had a serene spiritual feeling experiencing the statue's unveiling, and says that even though it feels like a long overdue moment, things like this often happen right on time.
Because it appears that our educational system is right back in the news again, as it was many years ago. And when you hear that word, we don't want our kids indoctrinated about past history. The word indoctrination itself sounds negative. It's not an indoctrination, it's a learning process so that we know American history.
Each of the 50 states has two representative statues at the U.S. Capitol. A ceremony unveiling the monument of legendary musician Johnny Cash takes place later this year. The number of pregnant women getting vaccinated is declining, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Wanda Barfield directs the Division of Reproductive Health for the CDC in Atlanta and says the troubling trend can lead to serious health problems for women and infants.
Vaccination coverage is lowest among Black pregnant people, and it may be that many Black people are feeling increased vulnerability within the healthcare system as they navigate the nationwide Black maternal and infant mortality crises. And we know that there are inequities within the environment where some Black people may view parts of their pregnancy as traumatic. And we also know that lived experiences may create barriers to being cared for and vaccinated.
Barfield is heading up the Centers From You to Me initiative to educate more women on the benefits and the need for vaccination.
Pregnant women actually create protective antibodies, not only for themselves, but for their babies. And these antibodies will help to protect the baby from several illnesses during the first few months of life when they're too young to be vaccinated themselves. And, you know, I talk with families about the importance of not only protecting mom while pregnant, but also making sure that they have the opportunity to protect their babies. And this is a really important way.
She says important vaccinations are the Tdap vaccine for whooping cough, RSV, COVID-19, and flu shots. Barfield says many women are nervous about the safety of these vaccines and can be susceptible to misinformation, but she urges people to speak with their physician or seek out help from a trusted healthcare agency.
Unfortunately, I've had the personal experience of seeing a baby who has been sick with RSV or respiratory syncytial virus. It's a very significant illness that can cause something like apnea, which is meaning that they stop breathing. It can cause respiratory distress. It's really a very terrible illness.
For more about vaccination coverage, resources, and information, you can visit cdc.gov/vaccines. And still to come on this Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large, local entrepreneurs working together to collectively grow the region's food industry.
And then using connections that I have to be able to potentially support them. So letting them know, like, hey, have you heard of this place? Bentonville Provisions is one. Like, it's a small local grocery store, and putting them in touch with the owners. So, I mean, that's something that I really get joy out of, is like helping others in any way that you can. You know, we're all in this together and we're all kind of looking for the same avenue.
Two winners from this year's Curate Courses program in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio in about 10 minutes on today's Ozarks at Large.
Time now for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Arkansas telecommunications provider Ritter Communications is investing several million dollars to expand its services in Benton County. Heath Simpson is the company's chief executive officer, and we will hear from him a little later on today's show. We have also got details of a new entertainment option coming to Dixon Street in downtown Fayetteville, and a major investment from the Walton family in Bella Vista. I'll have details of all of those stories and more after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at arkansasstatechamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Live fearless. More information at arkansasbluecross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Jonesboro-based telecommunications services provider Ritter Communications will invest $5.4 million in infrastructure to bring its fiber-to-the-home internet service, Right Fiber, to Rogers and Lowell neighborhoods. Right Fiber provides high-speed internet, television, and phone to serviceable homes with speeds up to 5 gigs. Heath Simpson is the CEO of Ritter Communications. He spoke recently with Roby Brock about the company and the future of broadband.
Yeah, tell me where Ritter Communications kind of was in March 2020, what's kind of happened over that last 4 years, and where you are positioning the firm for growth.
Yeah, great question, because Ritter Communications is this phenomenal growth story, and I love to tell the story. So if you go back in time, we really have our roots all the way back to 1906. That's when the company was started in Marktree down
in
the Delta. And we were family-owned, fifth generation, great, great story there that you know, we could expand on at some other time. But if you go back to 2020 or March 2020, we had just brought in a new partner, Grain Management. Not grain like agriculture, but named after the founder of the PE firm. Because the family knew that we had this great growth story at Ritter, but they didn't have the capital to bring to bear, and we partnered with Grain to do that. So we had capital ready to go, And then here comes the pandemic, March 2020. But we had,
which did turn out to be a growth period for firms like yours in the
retrospect. As a matter of fact, it did, right. So if you could imagine starting a new firm that has just brought in a private equity partner, you join them and you have all these plans as CFO, and then the pandemic, you know, happens, you sort of throw the playbook out the window.
Right.
But, you know, step one was, okay, are we going to survive? The answer is clearly yes. And it really helped folks understand the value of what we do at Ritter Communications. It is connecting communities, bringing broadband to folks who need it. So obviously folks understood with work from home, school from home, telemedicine, et cetera, what the value of what we brought to the communities really meant. And so our business really did take off. And so we had the capital, we had the know-how, we had a great team in place, and we said, let's just go. And we thought to ourselves, where do we want to be on the other side of this pandemic? So we're going to do the right thing for our customers, the right thing for our employees. We didn't lay anyone off. In fact, we hired. We hired like crazy. We went and raised some additional capital. We were the recipients of some broadband grants in Arkansas.
Right.
In fact, we're the number one recipient of broadband grants in the state. I'm very proud of that. And we grew the business like crazy. And we've connected 60 plus communities since that time, brought fiber communications to the little places like Oil Trough and Umphrey that didn't have it before. But we've also brought broadband, new fiber to Northwest Arkansas and other places like that.
Yeah, I get all the press releases. We report on almost all of them there.
I appreciate that.
Tell me what you're seeing in terms of industry trends and demographic trends where you know this is where the industry and particularly Ritter is going to be positioning itself for more growth. I suspect that data, AI, and broadband are all part of that equation.
Sure. One of the benefits of being in telecom for as long as I have been is you see the trends and these long-term trends, and you think about where did we predict the future to be. You know, now's the future from back then. And one of the things that has always rung true is if you have a fiber connection, the most bandwidth to a premises, whether that's a house, a business, a school, a city building, et cetera, having that fiber connection enables you to meet the future and whatever that future is. And whether it is AI or, you know, 3D television we thought was gonna be big for a while, that didn't pan out. But virtual reality is, you know, on the horizon. So those things are enabled through the fiber connections that we bring. So whatever the future is, we're confident that we can meet it. And I would tell you that when we launched, you may know, we're Ritter Communications, but we launched Right Fiber, our fiber to the home business that we launched in 2001. We launched that with a 1 gig service as the maximum speed. By the way, fiber optics is roughly infinite in speed. It's just the electronics or the box that you put in the house. So we made an educated guess that the max speed anybody would want at the time was 1 gig service. We had amazing demand for that. So last year we launched 2 gig and we launched 5 gig service. So the point I tend to think about and make to folks is we can meet the demand, whatever it is, with our great XGS PON. It's, you know, some wonky, you know, acronyms, but we have this state-of-the-art fiber connectivity that we bring to houses and businesses that's future-proof for the most part.
Ritter Communications launched its Right Fiber branded residential fiber offerings in 2021 throughout the Mid-South. The company completed its expansion into Centerton in September last year and will announce an additional Northwest Arkansas expansion in the upcoming months. In other news this week, Blue Crane, a real estate developer based in Bentonville, has finalized the purchase of 2,700 acres of undeveloped property in Bella Vista from Cooper Communities. The plan is to develop the land for outdoor recreation. Blue Crane is the development arm of Runway Group, a holding company led by brothers Tom and Stuart Walton. To engage with the public, Blue Crane has organized a public event Friday morning at the Bella Vista Country Club and has launched a dedicated webpage for information regarding the Bella Vista acquisition. The historic UARC Bowl in downtown Fayetteville is undergoing a transformation into a restaurant, bar, and sporting lounge named the Leroy Penthouse and Sporting Lounge. An investment group led by Ted Belden and Todd Ross is the owner. It is scheduled to open later this month. And longtime bank executive Don Gibson has died. Gibson was the founding CEO of Legacy National Bank in Springdale when the bank opened its doors in 2005. He was a board member and CEO emeritus at the time of his death. Gibson was 76 years old. For more news, visit us online at nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can follow our reporting each and every day. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you for being with us this Thursday. The latest edition of Curate Courses is over. The program's graduates are local food entrepreneurs, wholesalers, restaurateurs, farmers, and chefs. For months, the participants learned how to hone business and networking skills while still perfecting their food skills. The latest version ended last month with the Eclipse Food Festival presented by Curate and Forge. Each of the entrepreneurs were able to showcase their businesses, and two of the graduates each earned $5,000 awards. This week, those two winners came to the Carver Center for Public Radio. Allie Jones is the owner of Jamel Jams, and Katie Helms is proprietor of Grow NWA, supplier of locally grown microgreens. Also with us, Kim Bryden, the CEO of Curate. Allie Jones of Jamel Jams says there was plenty required for the entrepreneurs in advance of the culminating festival that took place last month.
Oh, wow. Well, there was coursework to do. I was in the hospitality cohort, and so we met every Wednesday online via Zoom and received wonderful teaching and instruction, but we had homework. There was class participation and a lot of research, again, like digging into our business and finding out like how to build a business from the ground up with good structure.
Tell me about your business. I mean, Jams is in the name.
Yeah. So Jamel Jams is my business, and we seek to spread joy and jam. And we do that with Lanyap, which is a little something extra. And so we like to say we do that from the inside out. We source mostly from local farms and gardens. We do fruit jams, pepper jams, but also floral jellies. So we want our product on the inside of the jar to be wonderful. But then we also want the outside of the jar to look giftable and to spread joy to who it's going to. And so we just try to be real classy with our design. And we also give back to charitable organizations in the community.
Floral jams?
Yeah.
Help me out. I don't know what a floral jam is.
Okay, so Mount Olive is one of our farms that we work with to get our flowers. And we get our viola flowers from there and rose petals from there to make an almond rose jelly, a viola jelly. We do a dandelion jelly. They're good.
These are edible?
They're edible.
How does one begin to use rose petals or dandelion in a jam or a jelly?
Yeah, so you need the flowers first, but then you just collect the petals and you soak them in water or you brew them in water and it makes a tea. And you use that tea to make, that's the base of your jelly, the juice of your jelly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so good.
I've got more questions, but first I want to go to Katie Helms. So you're a farmer.
Yes, a different kind of farming, yeah. I suppose, an indoor farmer. So I don't have to deal with the hot weather and the cold winters, which is nice.
And what do you grow?
I grow microgreens exclusively. We grow 15 to 20 different varieties of microgreens.
What are some of those varieties?
Oh, gosh, we have things like sunflower, pea shoot, radish, chard, beets, and then actually there's some flowers as well that you can grow as microgreens. So nasturtium and borage are a couple of flower examples.
And you're working with restaurants, and you deliver the microgreens to the restaurants?
We do. So I am actually a former chef. I spent 20 years working as a chef, and so part of the sort of importance when we were starting this business was building those close relationships with the chefs in the area. As I'm sure you know, there's a great food scene here in Northwest Arkansas, and there's just so many fantastic chefs.
This is part of what Curate does, right? I imagine many people don't know about floral jams. Mm-hmm. Many people don't know about microgreen delivery. I'm going to guess something that wasn't probably here that long ago.
Yeah, and what I also think is beautiful about these two incredible small business owners is that they're elevating all of their food systems, community connections through the development of their businesses and products. And Allie just shared that she buys her violas from Mount Olive Farm. Mount Olive Farm was our last year Curie Courses winner. And we invited Kayla, the owner of Mount Olive, to come back and be a judge at this year's showcase. And she was the one who awarded Katie here her $5,000 cash. This was not planned. And so I just love that this is such a burgeoning community. Like you said, this didn't exist, you know, 5-10 years ago. And look at this incredible example of these community connections flourishing right here.
You're in the hospitality cohort. Your cohort was the...
The wholesale cohort. Okay.
Did you find within your cohorts and then cross-cohort just some conversations, potential for collaboration? You're nodding, Allie.
Yes. I partnered with Ozark Charcuterie from the wholesale cohort, and we are collaborating together. Like, she's using our products on all of her boards. So that's been a super fun one. There's another, we had an amazing chocolatier, and she was in my cohort, but Stephanie with Musa Chocolates, and she is doing some chocolate bonbons for Mother's Day and using the Viola jelly in those. So those are just two that have been fun to partner with.
I don't know that I found direct collaboration, but what I just really enjoyed was meeting all of the other cohorts from my own cohort and Ali's cohort as well, just meeting all the other people and what they were doing. And then using... connections that I have to be able to potentially support them. So letting them know, like, hey, have you heard of this place? Bentonville Provisions is one. Like, it's a small local grocery store, and putting them in touch with the owner. So, I mean, that's something that I really get joy out of, is, like, helping others in any way that you can. You know, we're all in this together, and we're all kind of looking for the same avenues. So it's just been really fun and seeing their journeys as well.
Allie mentioned the homework, the work that was done, and I'm sure that was the same for your cohort. Did you find that this sort of, were there things that you needed to work on that have helped your business going forward?
Absolutely. I think going into the Curie experience, I was just going in with such an open mind as far as how it was going to help me on the business side of my business. We've been growing microgreens for 3 years. I'm comfortable there. And it really gave me a lot of sort of self-reflection and really highlighted areas for me that I needed to work on, maybe things I was already doing right, but then other things that I needed to improve on. And it just was really an overwhelming amount of information. But it definitely helped me to set some goals for this year and also know how to work towards those goals, not just setting them.
Allie is a small business owner. So you're, as you mentioned, you want the inside of the jar to be good. You want the marketing part of it to look classy and giveable. But there's also the books, the spreadsheets. What's that like being a small business owner?
Oh, that's not fun. I feel like as a small business owner, we are so much into the creative part of our product and marketing it. But sometimes that business side, the number side, at least for me anyway, can get overlooked. For sure. And it takes time to learn and really understand. And so Curie has been very helpful in setting prices right and understanding, you know, what margins need to, you know, what you need them to be. So it's been just so helpful.
And I think just illuminating the different aspects of running a business, because like both of these wonderful individuals have shared, you're so good at growing your thing, making your thing. And then when you have to take a step back and be like, wait, I'm running a business here. There's so many other aspects administratively, financially, that you have to consider if you want that creation of that product to survive and thrive in the marketplace. And so that could be setting up your QuickBooks account so that you're tracking your expenses accordingly, through to, am I actually inputting all of my costs of goods in order to actually know what the cost of production of this good needs to be? Because otherwise, I've seen entrepreneurs just walk into a grocery store and say, like, oh, that's the price of that thing. I'll just make it my price that thing too. So it's not based in actual data. So we're trying to illuminate where are the spots that we can bring in sales data, customer data, and make better choices for you and your business operations.
What was the deciding point for you to become a small business owner?
So my story is maybe slightly unique. My husband was an active duty infantry officer, just kind of moving all over the place. And the military community is pretty close-knit, pretty tight, but also there's a struggle, like 2020 was hard, just because during deployments and different things like that, you kind of want to go see your family, or you want your family to come to you, and that was a little tricky in 2020, and so I really wanted to bring joy to my military community and connect in those ways. And so that's what really got me started, was like, what can I do? What's in my hand? What can I offer in this hard season to my community? And JAM was that. Like, that was my thing. And so that's where it started. And then we transitioned from active duty and came home to Arkansas. And for the business, it was just a wonderful opportunity to grow. And it just excelled from there.
And Katie, moving from being in the kitchen to being in the greenhouse?
Not quite directly. I actually gave up being in the kitchens when I became a mom, because being a full-time mom and a full-time chef just don't really go hand in hand. But of course, I've always had a passion for food. I love to cook. I love to cook for friends and family. I love to garden. And once my kids started to get old enough that they could help in the garden and help cooking, like, it's always just been a passion of mine. And then since moving to Northwest Arkansas, just haven't seen the food scene here, but also the community. I just really have fallen in love with the community here in Northwest Arkansas. So wanting to find a way that I can kind of be involved in that was kind of part of the motivation in the beginning.
Let me bring this up to everybody, because I've heard from previous conversations with farmers and wholesalers and chefs that there is this sort of esprit de corps among the food industry here. Not so much competition. Is that really the case?
I would say so. I think that there's a particular type of entrepreneurship ecosystem in the small business community that is very collaborative and community oriented, that is different than other entrepreneurship sectors that I have been a part of in my life. And that's what has always attracted me to farm, food, hospitality, is that I think we have that perspective in general, and it attracts people who have that perspective of wanting to build for one another and be there for one another.
Okay, Allie, I'm going to ask, because you have seasonal products, right? So you have to plan ahead?
I do.
What's your schedule? Do you have a calendar on the wall or something that says, oh, strawberries are going to be ready here?
I do. I keep up with what the season, you know, what's coming out in the next couple of months. And then last year I invested in a really large freezer. It just stays stocked. But that's what I do. Just plan ahead.
For microgreens, is it year round?
It is, yeah. I mean, the beauty of them being grown 100% indoors is that they're not seasonal. We try and change the varieties seasonally, obviously to fit in with the kind of menus that the chefs are writing. But as far as the actual product, no, it's not seasonal. So it's great. We can grow all year long.
Much continued success to all of you, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Allie Jones is the owner of Jamel Jams. Katie Helms is the owner of Grow NWA. And Kim Bryden is the CEO of Curate. They joined me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio earlier this week. You can find out more about Jamel Jams and Grow NWA at their respective Instagram and Facebook pages. There is also jameljams.com. That's J-A-M-L jams.com. And you can find Grow NWA every week at the Bentonville Farmers Market. More about Curate at curate.co, as well as the Curate Instagram and Facebook feeds. And by the way, that's spelled C-U-R-E-A-T-E. This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow on Ozarks, Alan Burdick has conducted orchestras around the country and around the world. He's been a musician for almost all of his life. And this week, he brought his accordion to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And it's not just any accordion. many, but certainly not all, of the sounds of Alan Burdick's 45-pound digital accordion, all recorded in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. That's on tomorrow's Friday edition of Ozarks at Large.
This is Leah Uribe, Professor of Music and Associate Dean at the University of Arkansas Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We open Sound Perimeter today with Cradle Song of the Lonely Mother, Opus 108, by American composer and pianist Amy Beach, interpreted by Lily Tobias. As one of the first American women to achieve widespread recognition in the male-dominated world of classical music, Amy Beach's legacy continues to inspire generations of musicians and composers around the world. Cradle Song of the Lonely Mother is a poignant piece reminiscent of a lullaby that evokes a sense of maternal tenderness and longing, capturing motherhood's emotional depth and complexity through its gentle melodies and expressive harmonies. Let us continue listening to Cradle Song of the Lonely Mother and its colors and movement. That was pianist Lily Tobias interpreting Cradle Song of the Lonely Mother, Opus 108, by American composer and pianist Amy Beach. Today in Sound Perimeter, we are listening to music inspired by motherly love. American composer Charles Ives wrote Songs My Mother Taught Me in 1895, based on a poem by Czech composer Adolf Hajduk. With the softness of a lullaby, this song depicts a child's love for a mother who is not around anymore. To honor those absent mothers and the memories we carry and pass on to our own children, let us listen to an excerpt of this beautiful song performed by Mary Phillips, mezzo-soprano, and J.J. Pina, piano. Oh, That was mezzo-soprano Mary Phillips and pianist J.J. Pena performing an excerpt from Songs My Mother Taught Me by composer Charles Ives. We end Sound Perimeter today with Amy Lou Harris, Gillian Welsh, and Alison Krauss' song Go to Sleep, You Little Baby from the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Find out more about the musicians in our program notes. And cheers to all the mothers and maternal figures out there, whether they gave birth to us, stepped into the role, or were chosen in easy and complicated relationships. Today we honor your presence and hold a space for you through music. This is Leah Uribe, Professor of Music and Associate Dean at the University of Arkansas Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. Sound Perimeter is a show written and hosted by me and produced by Sophia Nurani, KUAF 91.3 in Fayetteville, Arkansas. This segment is dedicated to diverse voices in and around music. I hope it will expand your knowledge and connection to inclusive sounds and let music infiltrate your lives and transform your realities. Enjoy your day. Don't you weep, pretty baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby. She's long gone with the red shoes on. Gonna need another loving baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby. You and me and the devil makes three. Don't need no other loving baby. Go to sleep, you little baby. Go to sleep, you little baby. Come and lay your bones on the alabaster stones and be my
Elliot West, alumni distinguished professor of history at the University of Arkansas, is being recognized as one of the two runners-up for the Pulitzer Prize in History in 2024 for his book, Continental Reckoning, The American West in the Age of Expansion. The Pulitzer Committee writes the book is a masterly crafted and comprehensive narrative of how our nation's history unfolded across the American West and how the West, no less than the Civil War, profoundly shaped the rise of modern America. The Pulitzer in History for 2024 was awarded to Jacqueline Jones for her book, No Right to an Honest Living, The Struggles of Boston's Black Workers in the Civil War Era. Two Arkansas high school students are among those named as 2024 U.S. Presidential Scholars. Collier DeClercq of Gentry is a student at Bentonville West High School, and Ayanna Unati of Little Rock is a student at Little Rock Central. They were named as two of the 161 National Scholars earlier today. The program for next month's Bentonville Film Festival is ready for inspection. The 10th annual festival's full rundown was made public this morning. The opening film will be Out of My Mind, directed by Amber Seeley. The feature-length movie follows Melody Brooks as she navigates sixth grade as a nonverbal wheelchair user who has cerebral palsy. It's based on the New York Times bestselling novel by Sharon M. Draper. The Bentonville Film Festival will begin June 10th and will last through the 16th. Other films selected for screening include Blind AF, about a blind Paralympic champion and multiple world record holder during an attempt to become the first blind person to ride a single non-tandem bike across the United States, a feat that would cover 3,600 miles in 60 consecutive days. Also to be screened, Nuked. It's about a couple's Los Angeles evening that's spoiled after they learn a nuclear bomb is headed for their city. And that realization happens just as their cannabis-infused dinner kicks in. You can find the entire schedule of films at bentonvillefilm.org. This is, by the way, the last weekend to see Theater Squared's production of Fat Ham. The comedy drama, inspired by Hamlet, will be staged just five more times, beginning with tonight's show at the T2 Theater in Fayetteville. There are also Friday and Saturday night performances and Saturday and Sunday matinees. Details about showtimes at theater2.org. Last three home games of the Arkansas Razorback baseball regular season are this weekend at Palm Stadium in Fayetteville. beginning with tomorrow night's game against Mississippi State at 6:30. Other games in the series are at 6 Saturday night, and then the home regular season finale at 2 Sunday afternoon. Then the regular season will conclude with 3 games at Texas A&M next week. Razorback softball team is playing at the SEC tournament this week in Auburn, Alabama. Arkansas enters that tournament as the number 4 seed. Razorback men's and women's track teams are at the SEC Championships in Gainesville, Florida, beginning tomorrow. The women ranked 2nd in the country. The men are ranked 5th. Both teams are defending conference champs. And the Razorback women's golf team is headed to the NCAA Championships after winning the Las Vegas Regional yesterday. Arkansas led that regional after each completed round. The Razorbacks, ranked 9th in the country, will begin play at the National Championships May 17th at the Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville. And 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors for this Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large included Alexis Anderson, Daniel Carruth, Paul Gatling, Roby Brock, and Leo Ribe. Production assistance for today's show provided by Sophia Narani. Additional support today came from the news team at Little Rock Public Radio, 89.1 KUAR. Our new membership director at KUAF is Lisa Alt. Welcome, Lisa. Our theme is titled The First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl's most recent CD of solo guitar is titled Still Here. You can find it wherever you find music online. You can also find us wherever you find anything online. We're at OzarksAtLarge.com. Our podcast available through all major podcast platforms. And you can ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our daily program. You can also go to KUAF.com and subscribe to the daily Ozarks at Large KUAF newsletter that tells you what was on the previous day's show, keeps you up to date with what's going on around the region and around the state. Today's show produced inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks.
Botanical Garden of the Ozarks presents Chefs in the Garden, its signature spring fundraiser, May 21st, 5 to 8:30 p.m. Guests are welcome to enjoy live music, local libations, cooking demonstrations, and tastings by area chefs, all while supporting the garden's mission. Tickets available at bgozarks.org. Support for KUAF comes from East Hall Recording Studio, located at 4210 North Salem Road in Fayetteville. East Hall offers fully equipped recording sessions with an engineer for full groups or individuals. Full list of services, equipment, and booking information at easthall.com.